This show is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
A lot of these rallies we see now, and we've been able to pinpoint that there are certain groups. For example, veterans groups associated with Hillary were in front of Trump Towers. Then we see certain other leftist groups and supporters of Bernie and Hillary organizing at Trump rallies. It culminated in what happened in San Jose. I don't know if you saw the video. This poor woman literally was surrounded by a mob and waving the Mexican flag in her face, throwing an egg in her face, guys being chased down the road by a mob of people, getting punched and bloody and bruised. And then the San Jose mayor blamed you for what happened with these people that were involved in this violence. What is your response to that specifically, and more specifically when somebody like Angela Davis is urging people to, quote, do whatever is necessary to stop Trump? Do you interpret that as a threat?
Well, I think the mayor was absolutely a disaster. He didn't know what the hell he was doing. We had a tremendous rally with, you know, many, many thousands of people. The place was packed, and they left, and they met a bunch of thugs. They were absolute thugs. And by the way, the woman, she was incredible. The way she kept, you know, the stiff upper lip, she was incredible.
She was tough.
She was being
pelted
with eggs. She was strong. This woman is like, she was incredible the way she handled it. And then ultimately they let her inside because they saw what was happening was terrible. But these are thugs. These are people that were burning the American flag. They were absolutely terrible. And frankly, the mayor should be ashamed of himself. He couldn't do the job. I think he was almost afraid to do the job. But these were their people. These were Bernie people. They were Hillary people. These people are set out to do a mission. These aren't protesters. These are much worse than protesters. And when you see, some of the police told me, when you see people wearing face masks, you know, things over their face, you know they're professional agitators. And you had a lot of professional agitators. But inside that arena, that place was, it was a love fest, believe me.
Well, this is the temperament of our country today, Scott, is that you have these diametrically opposed. And I don't think it's that, you know, in a huge number. But we have this element that's participating in the election process that is disruptive. And we need to see them for who they are. I mean, after all, we do have a First Amendment right. Those people inside and people coming and going have a right to be able to express their political views, and this is something that I think is noticeably quiet. I mean, you're hearing crickets, you know, from, you know, the Sanders camp and the Clinton camp. I think anybody involved in politics should stand up against this and absolutely disavow anything and any kind of relationship whatsoever that they would think that this is acceptable.
Well, yeah, they preach tolerance and things like that. Except if you disagree with me.
Yeah, it's very conditional. It's a very conditional form of tolerance, there's no doubt.
You can have any opinion you want as long as it's not against mine.
Yeah, as long as it.
And that's, I think I've said it before here, and I'll say it again now. As a country, we've forgotten how to disagree. And we've forgotten that, you know, just because I'm offended, being offended doesn't actually do anything.
Right.
You're not actually put in danger or anything like that. So being offended, that should lead, rather than leading to people shutting down and not talking to each other, being offended, that should lead to a conversation.
Yeah.
I'm offended. I don't like what you did. This
right.
is why.
Right. Well, you know, the thing is, in this age of political correctness, we're ill-equipped to deal with it. And that's why when somebody steps up and gets outside the lines of political correctness, it's such a disturbance in the force here, so to speak, because people aren't used to it. You know, as you say, you know, they just do not know how to disagree and how to confront these issues that need to be confronted. You know, if somebody's being an idiot, I mean, you got to be able to do it. Hopefully you do it in a way that's civil. But it's tough because, you know that there's some people, regardless, they're going to want to hold their ground. We've got more coming up. Stay with us.
Are you worried about your mom or dad living alone in their house? Hi, I'm Joan London. Listen, I know how difficult it is to find senior care for someone you love. That's why I recommend a free service called A Place for Mom. They are the nation's largest senior living referral service. Call A Place for Mom today.
To receive free information on senior living communities in your area, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-704-6182.
A Place for Mom offers free one-on-one advice from local advisors and a personalized list of senior living communities you can visit. If you have questions about senior care for your mom or dad, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
Call A Place for Mom in the next 10 minutes to get your free ebook on financing senior care as well as free information on senior living communities in your area. Call 1-800-704-6182. That's 1-800-704-6182.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it. Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
We better stop and hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop and hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop.
Hey, once again, it proves that there's nothing new under the sun. It is time to stop and consider, a song of the 60s comes back to remind us that maybe we need to hit the pause button a little bit here. This is Bill Martinez. We're live at 6 minutes after the top of the hour. One of the things that we hear talked about from time to time, and it seems the volume on this issue of assisted suicide is starting to rise up a little bit, and we need to be aware of what's going on. So assisted suicide, bioethics, healthcare trends are currently widening the gray area of ethics and morals. Biological colonialism, a term coined by lawyer and award-winning author Wesley J. Smith, where nations are exploiting the health of the destitute in order to grow the organ donor black market, is rising. In his book, Culture of Death, The Age of Do-Harm Medicine, Smith argues that once we as a society decide that the sick and disabled can be killed to end their suffering, we can easily decide they can also be exploited for their body parts. Are we surprised what's been happening by way of even Planned Parenthood and that whole situation that has taken place? Wesley Smith, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you, sir?
Very well. Thank you for having me.
Hey, good to have you here to talk about this topic. I mean, there's so much to dissect here, especially in light of what happened with the recent revelations of Planned Parenthood and selling baby parts. And now they're trying to affect a law that says, look, if you blow the whistle on Planned Parenthood, if you do something to expose them, then they want a law that puts you in jail for exposing them, for blowing the whistle on them. I mean, this is all very dangerous.
Are you surprised?
No, I am not personally. Yeah. I am not surprised, but I want the public to wake up to see what's going on, because this thing has been swept under the carpet so quick. And here it is. We get David DeLeiden put into jail. And meanwhile, Planned Parenthood, which has overtly broken the law, is getting away with murder, and they're still getting our taxpayer dollars.
I'm afraid I expected this. I wrote a piece in the Weekly Standard when that whole story first broke. And I said, listen, this is going to create big headlines for 2 weeks, and then the wagons will be circled. And I pointed out that Jack Kevorkian was almost a decade assisting the suicide of people mm-hmm. who were not terminally ill. People, the media still describes them as only doing that, but 70% of Jack Kevorkian's victims were not terminally ill. Five weren't even sick upon autopsy. His goal wasn't to alleviate suffering, as he wrote in his own book, Prescription Medicide. His goal was to conduct human vivisection, and yet the wagons were circled around him, and he became very, very popular. So when those tapes broke, I suggested that, and also the Terry Schiavo case, where people came to support the idea of dehydrating to death a helpless woman, even though her blood family wanted to care for her for the rest of her life.
Right.
And I suggested that, okay, there'll be some sturm and drang, but, you know, people are going to eventually say, oh, hum, let's move on. And you see that happening now. What I think is different from Kevorkian is there was not the attempt to put those kinds of defenses in front of Kevorkian as you're seeing with Planned Parenthood. And here's one further irony. There were some laws passed, like in Idaho, to prevent animal rights activists from sneaking into animal industries under false pretense, pretending to be normal employees, mm-hmm. surreptitiously videotaping some of the practices and then releasing them.
Mm-hmm.
That's been declared unconstitutional. These animal rights activists have the right to go in and do this for the public good, yet, as you just pointed out, we're going to soon see people barred from doing the same thing with regard to the Planned Parenthood circumstance. Mm-hmm.
Well, the question you asked, am I surprised? I'm not surprised because we have developed into a culture of death. I mean, we've got 56 million aborted babies. I don't care where you stand on that issue. You cannot have that much blood or any blood spilling out so unjustly and somehow think that you come out of it unscathed. There is a price to be paid, and there is a price that some are paying now and we'll pay later on. It's kind of like that old Pennzoil commercial. It says you can pay me now or pay me later. And we have deferred it, and we're paying it later. And like anything, whenever you pay it later, it's much more complex.
And there's an incredible obtuseness that seems to have filtered into, for example, the assisted suicide debate. I live in California, and today is or maybe it's tomorrow, the big day where the media is all excited. Oh, boy, assisted suicide is legal. And one of the big stories here is that a fellow named Lonnie Shavelson is going into the death doctoring business, as I mentioned. He's opening a clinic. Now, I've been following Lonnie Shavelson for years. He wrote a book called A Chosen Death, in which he describes attending an assisted suicide by a Hemlock Society, assisted suicide person. Mm-hmm. And the person who was dying was a disabled man named Gene, and Gene was not dying. He'd had a stroke. He was disabled. He was alcoholic. He was depressed. And in the middle of the death process, Gene suddenly said, "No, mm-hmm. you know, I'm cold." And he tried to struggle not to be killed. And this Hemlock Society person put a plastic bag over his head and held it tight to make sure he died. And Shavelson writes, he just sat there and watched, didn't know what to do. So now this man, who was a moral coward in the face of a blatant murder, in my view, mm-hmm. is opening this clinic. But here's the thing. He's an emergency room physician. He's not an oncologist. He's not a specialist. He doesn't know how to treat cancer patients. He doesn't know what the best thing to do for kidney failure. He doesn't know how to best palliate care. So when people pay $2,000 to him to get go through the death doctoring process, lethal mm-hmm. prescription, they're not going to a doctor who would necessarily know all the ins and outs of what it takes to treat somebody who's got a terminal condition. Meaning, well, this is legal Kevorkianism.
Exactly. Well, like you said, are we surprised that we've come here? This has been the trajectory we've been on for quite a while. The term medical martyrdom has come up time and again here, Wesley. Explain to our audience what you mean by medical martyrdom.
Yes, as the culture of death progresses, you said it just gets more and more voracious, you're going to see that rather than mere legalization, you're going to see attempts made to create a positive right to be made dead by euthanasia or assisted suicide or to have an abortion, as you mentioned. And you're beginning to see if countries have that kind of a positive right, then you're going to see coercion to force medical personnel to engage in doing those killing acts, right?
Right.
So in Australia, Victoria, Australia, there is a law in effect that says if a woman approaches a doctor for an abortion and he has a moral objection or a religious objection, he must actually go out and find another doctor to do the abortion, meaning procure the abortion. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they could face medical discipline. That's medical martyrdom, and I know of at least one case already in Australia where a doctor refused a sex selection abortion referral and was punished for that. That's coming to Canada, where they've just instituted euthanasia throughout the country. That's being argued there, and it's not in this country yet, but it will be if the trends continue.
Well, without a doubt, and that's what you said. That's the operative word, yet. As we know, when this begins to raise its ugly head, unless it's lopped off, it comes to our shores quite rapidly. Wesley Smith is with us, author of the book Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine. And we've got more from Wesley on the other side of the break. Stay with us, America. It's just about 15 minutes after the top of the hour.
It only takes 7 seconds to make a good first impression, or a bad one for that matter. What if it only took 7 seconds to get to work in the morning? Think about it. 7 seconds from the bedroom to the workroom. The 7-Second Walk is a turnkey home business system. We are looking for individuals who would like to earn from $500 to $5,000 a month, working from home with their own home-based business. All you need is a computer, internet access, and a telephone. You choose your own hours, and you can work in your PJs if you want. What most people like best about the 7-Second Walk is our national advertising campaign that can have customers calling you. We will teach you everything you need to know to be successful. So, if you could use some extra money and would like to be your own boss, go to 7secondnow.com and request your free info pack. I'll bet you could get used to a 7-second commute. Go to 7secondnow.com. That's 7secondnow.com. Think about it. 7 seconds from the bedroom to the workroom. Go to 7secondnow.com. That's 7secondnow.com.
Dangerous blood clot device alert. If you or a loved one had an IVC filter placed to prevent blood clots from traveling to your heart or lungs and suffered an injury, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. The FDA warns that IVC filters may cause serious complications, such as heart or lung damage, internal bleeding, and even death. These dangerous blood clot devices can break, and the metal fragments can travel to your heart or lungs, causing serious injuries. If you or a loved one suffered organ damage or other injuries from an IVC filter, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Act now. Time is limited to file a claim. For a free consultation and free information, call Injury Help Desk at 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507.
This is an advertisement. Paid non-attorney spokesperson. InjuryHelpDesk.com is responsible for this advertisement. Principal Office, Las Vegas, Nevada. Paid non-attorney spokesperson, Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas, is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24/7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shopped the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-403-4885. That's 1-800-403-4885. 1-800-403-4885. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Cancer categorizes over 100 diseases. Though we do not diagnose, treat, or cure cancer, GCN team is offering the Clemson University study where there was up to a 95% reduction in cancerous cells when exposed to a plant-derived mineral supplement. If you or a loved one are searching for answers to this horrifying disease, come to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. We'll email you a copy for free. That's 877-878-4203.
Bill Martinez.
Your heart a break.
Hey, just the way you like me, fresh every day, 9 to noon Eastern, 6 to 9 a.m. Pacific time. Good to have you with us right now. We've got lawyer, award-winning author Wesley J. Smith with us, senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. He's also a consultant to the Patients' Rights Council. In May of 2004, because of his work in bioethics, Smith was named one of the nation's premier expert thinkers in bioengineering by the National Journal. In 2008, the Human Life Foundation named him a great defender of life for his work against assisted suicide and euthanasia. His latest book is Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine, a revised and updated edition of his award-winning Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America, warning about the dangers of the modern bioethics movement, and was named one of the 10 Outstanding Books of the Year and Best Health Book of the Year for 2001. Wesley Smith, thank you so much for being with us to talk about this controversial and sensitive issue that, you know, we're going to find this year and in the next 5 years an increase awareness of this option for people, because this is more than a theory. I mean, this has been practiced in this country, and we might even say right now it's active in the shadows, but it wants to come out of the closet, doesn't it?
Yeah, and there's a real pincer going on, because on the one hand, as you mentioned, this idea of death doctoring is proceeding apace, where the proper approach to suffering is killing rather than caring. On the other hand, you're also beginning to see a greater push towards things such as healthcare rationing and refusing wanted life-sustaining treatment, something known as feudal care, where doctors and bioethics committees are beginning to decide that when a patient wants life-sustaining treatment, that if they don't think that the quality of that patient's life should support that kind of treatment, and let's get into the money aspect, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they can say no to wanted care. It's like a restaurant saying we reserve the right to refuse service. Well,
exactly.
Let's take a look at what this feudal care really is. It isn't being refused because it doesn't work. And let me give an example of that with a really broad example, which just to show you what I mean. Let's say I came to Bill Martinez, my doctor, and I said, gee, Bill, doc, I've got an earache. Take out my appendix. You'd say, I'm not taking out your appendix for an earache,
right,
because that
right.
would be futile. It wouldn't do anything. That's
right.
not the kind of thing we're talking about. We're talking about refusing treatment not because it doesn't work, but because it does work. So who's being declared futile in that circumstances? The patient.
Exactly.
This is a form of ad hoc healthcare rationing that is seeping into hospitals. It is permitted in Texas by law specifically. There have been lawsuits around the country about this, and this is going to be a big deal in the coming months. Then you've got the coming Obamacare care guidelines that have not yet been created. But as medicine in this country becomes more technocratic and centrally organized and centrally controlled, you're going to see efficacious treatment. The guidelines say you don't have to give that for certain people, a form of medical discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to see potentially the kind of healthcare rationing they have in England, where it's based on a quality of life judgmentalism. And so your loved one who could benefit from treatment maybe refused it because, let's say they're 90 years old, they may not be deemed worth the price of admission.
Exactly. Well, and as you say, it's already being done in Europe, and you know, we know the pattern. We talked about it when the debate, as much as we could have it, over Obamacare came up, and of course the president, you know, basically lied to us, said that no, you know, there's nothing there, just move on. But you know, we see the trajectory, we see the calculus, and like you say, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that if the government is in charge and they're looking at sustaining it, they're going to look at all angles. So it's a natural consideration to say, look, if I can sell your body part and sustain the greater aspect of the healthcare process, I'm justified. Why not?
And you're going to have life and death decisions made by strangers.
Exactly.
Not by family members, not by
patients, by doctors.
By strangers, and realize that we're told we should fill out medical advance directives, and I certainly support that. But this feudal care thing specifically allows bioethics committees and doctors to veto your medical advance directive. So if you make the decision to die, that will be always considered, oh, that's sacrosanct, we can't interfere with that.
Exactly.
But if you make the decision to try to live, oh, no, only if we think your life is worth living. And that's a very insidious thing that we have to warn against. Part of what I'm doing with Culture of Death is forewarning people so they can be forearmed and defend their loved ones if, I'm not saying when, but if they find that their loved one is being pushed out of the lifeboat, at least they might be prepared mentally to say, wait a second, this is not what we want. This is not what grandma wants. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure she gets the kind of care that she advocated for herself and her own values.
Exactly. Well, let me ask you about euthanasia. Now, has it been conjoined with organ harvesting anywhere in the world?
Yes, and this is something I predicted back in 1993 in my very first anti-euthanasia article, which appeared in Newsweek. I warned that if you go down euthanasia road, you're going to end up with organ harvesting as a plum to society. In Belgium now, specifically, they conjoin euthanasia with organ harvesting. And one of the most disturbing things that I've noted is that this is reported with all due respect in medical organ transplant medicine journals, professional journals, in bioethical journals. And one of the journals, articles I quote in Culture of Death, they followed four people who were brought to a hospital, euthanized, and then their organs taken, and whether that the organ transplant was successful. And they were all excited because it was. But I said, who were these people who were killed? Mm-hmm. Three had non-terminally ill disabilities, and one was mentally ill. Oh. So I dug a little deep, and I said, what was the mental illness? Bill, the mental illness this euthanized person had was self-harming. So the treatment for self-harming was to be killed. I can't think of a more bitter irony. And even worse, the message to people with serious disabilities, serious mental illnesses in Belgium who are having trouble getting through the night, who are in existential despair, is your death have greater value than your lives for your society. That's an incredibly dangerous message. And the only thing worse is if society accepts that premise.
Yeah, you better stop complaining.
It makes it hard. It's cruel and abandoning.
Yeah, exactly.
People in that circumstance need care and help getting through the night. They don't need to be told, wow, you know, why, you understand it's a terrible suffering you have, but gee, if you die, we could save the lives of five other people.
And somehow the ends justify the means.
That's
and
right. This is totally utilitarian.
Exactly. And so here it is, this culture of death that is promoting itself in today's society, but we've opened the door to it. And, you know, and so here it is. And as you said, when we first started talking, am I surprised? I am not surprised, but what do you think is going to, you know, what this country is going to look like 5 years from now?
Well, unless we stand strong, the kind of erosion we saw in Europe, in the Netherlands and Belgium, will happen here. And considering that California is now about to have assisted suicide, about 12-13% of people in this country will live in a legalized assisted suicide environment. And that could lead to social martyrdom. Let me explain what I mean. Let's say your grandma lives in California. I don't know where you are, Bill, but let's say
I'm in Florida, but my mother lives in California. She's 92 years old. So,
well, let's say she had a terminal illness. I guess I don't have time to finish it, but you might be asked to attend her suicide. Mm. If you do, you're validating her suicide. You become morally complicit in it. You're saying her fears of being a burden are true. But if you don't, you might end up with family ostracism because of your judgmentalism. This has the potential to tear families apart.
Exactly. A lawyer and award-winning author, Wesley J. Smith, has been with us, senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. His book, The Culture of Death, The Age of Do-Harm Medicine, you can go to his website, humanexceptionalism.com, for more information. The book is available at all the usual places. Wesley Smith, thank you so much for being with us. This is Bill Martinez. We're live at 29 after the top of the hour.
This report is brought to you by Bank of America, working with home design and DIY experts Ben and Aaron Napier. With summer in full swing, now's the time to refresh outdoor space for hangouts. All too often, renovations and decorating can be intimidating. Here are some tips to tackle backyard projects.
We love spending summer nights with family and friends. And whether we're barbecuing or just relaxing, if the weather's good, we're on the porch. To get your summer ready, give the wood a fresh coat of weather-resistant paint and install string lights to keep the party going after the sun goes down.
I like to use perennial plants for a pop of color because they look just as good as annuals, but they last longer. And whenever we shop at wholesale clubs and grocery stores for our backyard projects, we use our Bank America Cash Rewards credit card, and we earn 2% cash back. Even better, we can also earn 3% cash back on gas for the first $2,500 and combine grocery, wholesale club, and gas purchases each quarter, and 1% on all other purchases.
For more information, visit bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Today, how to incorporate your business in just 10 minutes so you won't lose everything if you get sued. Step 1, stop putting it off. If you're not incorporated and someone sues your business tomorrow, it's not just your business at risk. You can lose everything, your home, your car, even your life savings. Step 2, call the following number for a free 10-minute incorporation guide from Incorporate.com. 1-800-941-5257. They don't provide legal or financial advice. They just make incorporating quick and easy. So you can incorporate or form an LLC in just 10 minutes. That number again is 1-800-941-5257. Step 3, congratulate yourself. By taking just 10 minutes to incorporate your business or form an LLC, you protected your home, your car, and your life savings. And that is how you incorporate your business in just 10 minutes. But hurry while they're still giving away these 10-minute incorporation guides for free. Call 1-800-941-5257. That's 1-800-941-5257.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich, working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. At Be the Boss Network, you'll find hundreds of work-from-home opportunities that you can literally start today and be earning money as soon as next week. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss. Get out of the rat race. Work from home. Go to freedom106.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 106.com. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom106.com.
You're listening to Bill Martinez live.
Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like that's what you want.
Join us online at BillMartinezLive.com.
Absolutely no truth whatsoever that this is the song that Barack Obama was playing to Bernie Sanders as he visited him in the White House today, although he probably was hoping maybe he might be able to control a little bit of the attitude. What do you think? 28 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back, America. Bill Martinez here with you, along with Chris Edelson. He's a Harvard-educated lawyer and American University professor. And what we're taking a look at is these, you know, 2016 presidential election. I mean, the timing of his book couldn't be more perfect in light of a rather active president and, you know, some overreach, executive overreach, which has been challenged more than once. And it makes you wonder, because of what President Obama has set into motion, what is going to happen down the road? What would a President Trump or a President Clinton do in terms of taking executive orders to a whole nother level? Chris Edelson, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great. I appreciate it. I enjoyed the song, too. My kids watch a lot of Despicable Me, too, so it's in my head, actually.
Exactly. Well, I'm with you. Well, it is a happy song, and it will help set the mood. There's no doubt about it. And certainly with what's going on in presidential politics today, we need some mood-setting music to maybe help us swallow some of the stuff that's going on. But now we've got to really deal with the reality of what happens with a President Trump or a President Clinton in light of what President Obama has put into motion.
Right. That's my concern. That was the reason for my writing the book. Mm-hmm. Or really, going back to September 11th itself, I was living in New York on September 11th. It was really, you know, terrorism is scary. It's a scary thing. And scared me. I wanted to understand what was going on. I've been following what presidents have done since September 11th, both Presidents Bush and Obama. And as you say, there's some dangerous precedent out there. And there's a lot of attention on Trump, and I understand it. It's interesting to me, too, to follow what's going on. But the reality is there are concerns, there should be concerns about whoever the next president is when it comes to presidential power.
Well, this is why in the Constitution there's checks and balances.
Right.
But the checks and balances, you would argue, in the last 8 years in particular, have been lacking. Yep. You know, you're saying Congress, you know, in soundbites says they're outraged, but that's about all that they do in order to hold this president back. I mean, here recently there's been a couple of steps, and I'm glad to see that they finally have brought it to the court. They got standing. And they're pushing back a bit on the president, but are we a little bit too late here?
They push back a bit. What's curious to me, though, is Republicans have pushed back on President Obama when he's taken action domestically, things mm-hmm. like immigration, you know, like deferred status for immigrants, right. Affordable Care Act delaying implementation of the act, things like that. On the national security side, they are, and this is sort of curious to me, very deferential. I'll give a couple of quick examples. The war against Libya, fighting against mm-hmm. Libya in 2011. President Obama authorized military action against a terrible dictatorial regime, the Gaddafi regime, but it was a regime that didn't threaten the United States. Under the Constitution, Congress should have approved this action. It didn't. The ongoing action against ISIS. ISIS is a hideous group. I mean, I can't believe a group like ISIS exists. Mm-hmm. It's nightmarish. But the reality is ISIS does not directly threaten the United States right now. I mean, I'm not saying they're not a threat, but they're not actually attacking the United States at the moment, fortunately, or engaged or posing an imminent attack to the United States. Under the Constitution, Congress should authorize military action against ISIS. It hasn't, and it confuses me or surprises me, concerns me that Congress has not taken action. They just have allowed this to happen, and that creates the precedent going forward that presidents can decide on their own when military action is needed, which is, as you said, under the Constitution, not how it's envisioned. It's a system of checks and balances, and actually, Congress should have primary control over military action.
Mm. Well, based on what we're aware of in terms of Libya and what happened with Gaddafi, very interesting. I mean, here it is. We get Gaddafi to surrender his weapons of his nuclear ambitions, and he fesses up, lays himself open, and becomes vulnerable with this next administration. You know, the United States, by our actions, definitely told the Middle East you know, how they have to behave. Is it any wonder Iran says, well, we're going to hold on to our nuclear ambitions and work out the deal that we've got? And, you know, everybody else is going, wait a minute, how did we get there?
Yeah, and I think that if you disagree with what's happening, the question I would ask is, where is Congress on this? If Congress,
exactly.
What does Congress think about ISIS? I mean, it's obvious what they think about ISIS, hideous group, something should be done. Why are they not involved in deciding what to do? And the reason that concerns me is, even though ISIS is a horrible group and things need to be done, and there are other dangers you mentioned in the Middle East and other parts of the world, when presidents act alone, you sometimes get really bad results. Libya is an example. 2011, the United States goes into Libya, not to defend Gaddafi in any way. Terrible dictator was killing civilians, but the United States action paved the way for ISIS to become active in Libya.
Mm-hmm.
When presidents make decisions, like anyone else, they can make mistakes, and I would like Congress to play its constitutional role and insist on being involved in these decisions in the future.
Well, the president, particularly Barack Obama, because he said this, is that things move too slow on the Beltway.
He
thought it should be expedited. People who
right.
supported him, like the Bill Maher of the world, said, hey, look, why don't you just make a decision? Go make it happen. And so from that point early on in his administration, we now have I have a pen and a cell phone diplomacy and government in action. The heck with we the people, the heck with due process, and that uncomfortable thing called the U.S. Constitution.
This is a great point, because I hear this come up a lot, and I think it's a fallacy. President Obama is not the only one to say this. It's not a partisan issue. People on the right say this sometimes, too. The idea that when it comes to defending the United States, you have to move quickly, and Congress is just too slow. History doesn't bear this out. I've looked into this in detail, and you just can't find instances. In American history, when the United States, unfortunately, this happens sometimes when the United States is attacked or faces threats, Congress moves quickly. Pearl Harbor, Japan
yes.
attacks the United States on December 7th. Congress declares war the next day. World War One, April 1917, it becomes clear that Germany is trying to get Mexico to attack the United States, is engaged in submarine warfare against the United States. Woodrow Wilson asks Congress to act. It does so immediately, within days. September 11th, this is amazing to me because it's so recent. 3 days after September 11th, Congress passed legislation authorizing the Bush administration, and now Obama as well, to use military force against al-Qaeda and the Taliban. So the historical record shows this idea that Congress is slow and presidents have to act quickly because things get gridlocked in the Beltway. Well, that happens on a lot of issues, of course, but not when it comes to national security, actually. Congress has proven it is capable of acting quickly. When presidents don't go to Congress, it's not because they're concerned it will be slow. It's because they just want to act alone. They don't want Congress to be involved at all.
Exactly. Well, and then, you know, they get the full brunt. They get the full responsibility, like President Obama in healthcare.
Yes.
I mean, it wasn't moving right. He didn't want to go do process. He figures, hey, look, I'll work with one party. I'll make this happen. And we have a good idea, run amok.
Well, is it any wonder? A little different. Healthcare did move through legislation. I mean, not that one cannot object to it. People disagree about these policies and perfectly legitimate to do so, but healthcare is different because it did move through the legislative process. One might object, you know, about how things should be done and whether there should be bipartisan support, but that was not unilateral action. President Obama didn't just say, I'm imposing my view of healthcare, I'm going to act unilaterally. He does do that in the national security context. And as I say, it's curious to me why critics of the president who raise perfectly legitimate complaints and criticisms about his actions domestically are so deferential when it comes to national security action, where there's a much better case to be made that President Obama is acting unilaterally outside the Constitution without congressional approval, especially when it comes to the use of military force.
Well, I don't want to get into the weeds necessarily with Obamacare, but I would suggest, based on history, that President Obama has acted unilaterally. I mean, outside of the realms when things need to be changed and brought back to Congress. He set up the system in such a way that he could do this. I mean, you know, and
there were some changes. What I meant was the initial legislation was passed by Congress.
Yeah,
so you're right.
Exactly.
They took some actions unilaterally. That's true.
Well, when we come back, Chris Edelson, I want to talk about the origins of the Constitution and the system of checks and balances. We touched on that for just a moment, but hey, you're the attorney, you're the professor. We're at your feet. We're listening and we're taking notes. Okay. So we all want A's in this class, by the way. Okay, but we want to earn it. We're willing to work for it. It's 18 before the top of the hour. This is Bill Martinez. We're coming at you live. More with Professor Chris Edelson, attorney, and he's breaking it down for us. So stay with us, America.
This is an alert. If your business or church is building this year, you're about to pay more than you should. This could mean thousands of dollars more for your office, retail space, church, or warehouse. A General Steel building can save you as much as half the cost and time of similar conventional construction. And we're offering rebates of up to $20,000 to help you build today. Call General Steel for free information that could save you thousands. Call 866-91-STEEL.
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 Are you married? Do you and your husband both have term life insurance? If you both don't, you should. You have a lot to protect. Call now, get a free quote for your husband, and while you're at it, get a quote for yourself too. Because you both need term life insurance. Call now. 800-915-9164. 800-915-9164. 800-915-9164. Rates are at all-time lows. We'll shop over 30 top-rated companies to get you the best possible rates. Term life insurance. It's the perfect way to protect the quality of your family's lifestyle. You and your husband both need term life insurance, so call now for a free quote for the both of you. 800-915-9164. 800-915-9164. 800-915-9164.
There's nothing more enticing and intoxicating than the finest meat cooking on an open flame. Freeze-dried meat from NewHarvest.com is U.S.-grown, 100% all-natural with no extra fillers. Just grass-fed beef and free-range chicken guaranteed to stay fresh and delicious. Add NewHarvest freeze-dried meats to your current food storage. You'll buy direct from the factory, not a third party, ensuring the best price and the highest quality. See all our products at NewHarvestFoods.com. That's NewHarvestFoods.com.
We use mobile devices right against our bodies every day, but growing scientific evidence has emerged showing serious health risks associated with exposure to EMF radiation emitted from these devices. The solution is Defender Shield, the most effective mobile radiation shielding ever developed. Defender Shield blocks virtually 100% of EMF radiation from cell phones, tablets, and laptops, and starts at just $64.99. Buy now at DefenderShield.com. For 10% off, use promo code GCN. DefenderShield.com, the worldwide leader in mobile radiation shielding.
Here's Dr. Paul Meyer, Christian psychiatrist, author of 85 books, and founder of the national chain Meyer Clinics, to tell you about To Your Health liquid vitamins.
I've been taking these every day for over a decade now, and I try to encourage every one of my clients to take them every day, and there's a number of reasons. First of all, it's the best vitamins you can get. It's got dozens of vitamins, antioxidants, and nutrients in it. And then the most important reason why I do it as a psychiatrist and recommend it to my patients is because it's got brain food in it. It's got the essential amino acids. It's got tryptophan, phenylalanine, tyrosine, choline, vitamin B6, and these chemicals that are all natural from food turn into the brain chemicals that make you happy.
To Your Health is delicious. Find out more today. Call us 800-801-3459 or visit online at mytoyourhealth.com. Use the coupon code RADIO15 for a 15% discount on your order. That's mytoyourhealth.com.
Worried about lead, fluoride, and other contaminants in your drinking water? Get a ProPure with the Pro 1G 2.0 cleanable reusable filter and remove up to 200 contaminants. Drink water the way nature meant it to be. Clean, crisp, and refreshing. See the complete line of ProPure products, including the new ProMax shower filter. There's a ProPure for you. Visit your authorized ProPure dealer for details or ProPureUSA.com. That's ProPureUSA.com.
Listening to Bill Martinez live.
And I met you in the summer.
Hey, we're back with you, America. 14 minutes before the top of the hour. Chris Edelson is a Harvard-educated lawyer, American University professor who has literally written the book on presidential power, and he is with us talking about it. Chris, I wanted to talk about the origins of the Constitution, the system of checks and balances, and why it is so vital, I believe.
Yeah. I appreciate it. Okay. I mean, you're right. That's the point to start from, and it does get lost. It's funny. I was in high school for the 200th anniversary of the Constitution being drafted in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. It was drafted in 1787, and we never read the document. You know, I remember people mentioning it's incredible. This stuff doesn't get covered, and I remember being intimidated by the Constitution. I thought, how could I read this? How could I understand it? Mm-hmm. It's actually a pretty straightforward document. It's not super long. The original document itself. I mean, there's some parts of it that are a little obscure, some of the details of how Congress makes its rules, but it's fairly digestible, even, I'd say, you know, by a bright middle school student, and that's the place to start. And so the Constitution itself was drafted because the original document governing the United States, the Articles of Confederation, had failed. Mm. That was drafted during the Revolutionary War. It wasn't providing for a strong enough government. There was no executive at all, because the revolutionaries, of course, rejected a monarchy. They wanted to get rid of the king, the Declaration of Independence. Described the king as a tyrant. So they were reluctant to change. But what they understood, and I think this is interesting, drafters of the Constitution understood they could make mistakes. And when the original document, the Articles of Confederation, didn't work, they were afraid the country was going to fall into pieces. It broke up into different regions. They created, and there was fear of revolution as well. They created the Constitution to solve those problems. And under the Constitution, they created a president. But they were very clear. They said the president will not be a king. Alexander Hamilton wrote about this. All their drafters agreed with this. Their point was, we need a president who has enough power to do things like defend the nation, carry out responsibilities, preside over the executive branch of government, but we don't want unlimited power. And that's your point about checks and balances. That's the way they solved this. They said, okay, the framers of the Constitution were students of history. They knew about ancient history, recent history, kings in Britain going too far, Julius Caesar, tyrannical rule in Rome. And they said, we want to make sure that there are limits on the power of not just the president, but each branch of government. And the way we will do that is by creating three branches of government that have an incentive to exercise their power and prevent the other branches from getting too strong.
Exactly. Well, and to your point about some of the confusion, a good friend of mine, Mike Holler out of Colorado, he's a linguist, and he wrote a parallel version of the Constitution. It's called The Constitution Made Easy. So you have the original, the original verbiage of the Constitution on one page. On the other page, you have the modern-day English version of what it is. So if you run into snags, This is an excellent resource that I recommend to people, called The Constitution Made Easy by Michael Holler. And I have maintained that we need to revisit the Constitution on a regular basis. If we're not doing it in the institutions that we would expect in academia that they should, you know, there's certain days, you know, whether it's the 4th of July, Memorial Day, you know, to remember, you know, people who have paid the ultimate price for the Constitution, at least connect yourself to understand why is it that men and women are willing to sacrifice their lives for the sake of this incredible American experiment that here today we're enjoying.
Yes, and actually there is a Constitution Day now that Congress recognized a few years ago on September 17th, and it's a good that there's a requirement every school that receives funding from the government has to do something to recognize the Constitution on that day. And I go, my daughter goes to elementary school, she's in kindergarten, I go to her school every year and talk to kids there about the Constitution, so it is a good opportunity to talk about these things. And what I find is even young kids, they can understand these things. They've heard about some of these issues. If you talk to them about, you know, what's free speech, what's the president, they know this stuff, they can talk to you about it. Even really young kids, 8 and 9 year olds. So you're right, these things should be discussed.
You know why the kids relate to this? You know, to me, you know what I've been able to determine why they do? Because it's fair.
Right,
kids
care about fairness,
kids,
that's true.
Kids hate anything that's unjust and unfair. They will bristle against that. I mean, that is one of those things you learn in the sandbox of life in kindergarten.
Sure.
You know, and so when you break down the Constitution and it rhymes with the DNA that says, yeah, this is fair. As much as they can understand. Right.
They do care a lot about those kind of things. But I'm always surprised that they've heard about some of these. You know, I'll ask them, these 8, 9, 10 year olds, have you heard of the Bill of Rights? You know about free speech? And they know, I mean, they don't know every detail, but they know something about it enough that you can have a discussion.
Exactly. And then they go and debate with their teachers, and the teacher said, thank you very much for bringing that up. We had a nice benevolent dictatorship in this classroom until you came here.
Well, no. The teachers are into that. At least that
I'm teasing.
Like stuff too.
Yeah, right. I was raised by nuns, Chris, so, you know, this is the way they rolled, you know, so yeah, a little bit different, you know.
It depends on the setting. That's true.
Exactly. Well, again, checks and balances, very important, and it behooves those that we elect to exercise that right as much as we need to exercise our right, which the Constitution really put the onus on this government, on we the people. And if we're not exercising our right in privilege, well, you have what we have today, right?
That's the key point. It's funny. It's a good point you make. When I grew up thinking about government, I thought about it in terms of something that was outside of me, like there are these people doing things. It begins with the people. And James Madison said in the Federalist Papers that the most important check in the government is the people themselves, which was sort of surprising. You think about things like, you know, the courts exercising judicial review or the Senate confirming nominees. Madison said the primary check in government itself is the people. So you're right. It begins with people, and people shouldn't give up that important duty.
Well, we've touched on a couple of examples historically, Chris, where there's been a concentration of too much power in the executive branch. And I want to give you a little bit more opportunity. We've got about 3 minutes left here, maybe four, you know, to drill down a little bit and unfold a couple of more examples that the people need to be aware of, that this is – I mean, they have a sense of this, I think, a cursory sense, because, you know, what I've been saying is that, you know, particularly in the recent years with the economy, people have been, you know, scrambling to survive. And when we say on the show, look at, you know, all hands on deck are required to get this country back on track. 7 out of 10 say we're on the wrong track. Okay, well, I say good observation. So let's come to a conclusion here. And the conclusion is that we, the people, need to re-engage our government. But, you know, they're not going to necessarily get into the nuance of all these different offenses that have gone on. But I want you to remind them of some things that we need to be mindful of because of, you know, what has happened in our country and why people are irritated. They, like you say, just like the little kids in school, they may not fully understand and articulate the nuance of it, but they sense overall that it's just not right.
Yeah, and I think that's probably a problem with information not getting to people. So I'll mention a few things, some in more distant history and some more recent. What jumps to mind to me is during World War II, President Roosevelt issued Executive Order 9066, which led to the internment of about 110,000 Japanese Americans on the west coast of the United States.
Exactly.
This action was ratified by Congress, ratified by the Supreme Court. There's no evidence that these people, men, women, disabled, elderly, infants, babies, were put in camps during World War II. That's a really, you know, dark stain on American history. President Truman sent the military to Korea 1950 without congressional approval. That's led to presidents since then have cited that as authority to go to war on their own, which is not what the Constitution permits. Nixon, during his presidency, had a theory. He talked about this in the interviews 1977 with David Frost, that the president is above the law. When the president does something, it's not illegal. By definition, it's not illegal. Since September 11th, the Bush administration had a secret surveillance program, which was violated federal law, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, that people were reporting about this in late 2005. The Obama administration has not followed the same approach, but the bulk metadata collection that was exposed by Edward Snowden a few years ago raised similar concerns. My biggest concern right now, as I mentioned before, is the use of military force. After September 11th, the Bush administration wrote a memo, September 25th, 2001, written by a lawyer named John Yoo, that said that it was a secret memo for a couple of years, said that the president has complete authority to decide when the military can be used. The Bush administration never acted on that because Congress approved the military action against Iraq and against al-Qaeda and the Taliban. The Obama administration has not used those exact words, but it's reached the same conclusion. When we want to use military force, we can. That's the most troubling thing to me, because under the Constitution, this is not a decision for the president outside of the emergency context when there's no time to check with Congress. And I worry about what that means, not just now, but for the future. Can presidents decide when they want to go to war on their own? They shouldn't be able to. And
well, Chris,
can stop this when they want to.
Exactly. Well, historically, the president has been able to, commission the Marines without congressional support. Isn't that so? Because the Marines have been the president's own, to where he could call them into action.
Marines are not mentioned in the Constitution. I disagree with that.
I don't know, but that's being a former Marine, this was one of the things that was part of our history, that we were told that we were the president's own, that whenever the president wanted to call us to duty, that he could do so without congressional approval.
No, not under the Constitution. I mean, maybe as a matter of practice, but the Constitution says that Congress has control about declaring war. Congress has the power to set rules and regulations for the military services. The president does not possess that power unilaterally. Now, it's true a lot of presidents have acted that way, but just because they're violations of the Constitution doesn't change the text. But as I said before, the key here is Congress. Congress can act when it wants to, and it has sometimes. One example I'll give quickly, 2013, the Assad regime in Syria was using chemical weapons against civilians. The Obama administration said it was going to take action unilaterally. About 140 members of Congress sent a letter to President Obama, and they said, wait a second, the Constitution doesn't allow you to do this. Syria, as terrible as it is not a direct threat to the United States. If you want to act, you have to get legislative approval from us. And Obama agreed. He went to Congress, and it turned out, in the meantime, while he's waiting for Congress to vote, there was a diplomatic resolution to the situation, and the need to attack the Assad regime was obviated. There's still terrible things happening in Syria, but that particular reason went away. So that is encouraging to me. When Congress wants to act, it can.
Exactly. Well, Chris Edelson, for a time such as this, your book, Power Without Constraint, as the voter politic considers who will be our next president, will it be Donald Trump? Will it be President Hillary Clinton? Time will tell, but we have a very, very important decision before us, and we also need to encourage our elected officials, that would be Congress and the Senate, to make sure that they act consistent with the Constitution, which is something that we say should and is the law of the land. Chris Edelson, Harvard Law School and professor on Bill Martinez Live. Thank you, Chris.
As a doctor, I see patients every day who are losing their vision to age-related macular degeneration, also known as AMD. If you have blurry vision or blind spots, they can be symptoms of AMD, and if untreated, could lead to blindness. The good news? AMD can be managed with effective, clinically approved treatments that may reverse some vision loss. For free AMD information, contact the Foundation Fighting Blindness at 1-800-BLINDNESS. That's 1-800-BLINDNESS. There is a cure in sight.
Are you worried about how dangerous the world has become? In these days of terrorist attacks, natural disasters, or even a future collapse, you need to be medically prepared to keep your family safe. I'm Joe Alton, MD of store.doomandbloom.net, where you'll find an entire line of uniquely designed medical kits and supplies for when help is not on the way. For everything from individual first aid kits to the ultimate family medical bag, go to store.doomandbloom.net today. That's store.doomandbloom.net. You'll be glad you did.